You're listening to SIW Radio, the security podcast series from SecurityInfoWatch.com. I'm Jeff Cole, editor of the site and host of this podcast, and this is episode 47. Our topic today are some of the top information security holes. We're also going to look at physical security holes. And with us today, we have Kevin Beaver. Kevin is the CEO of Principal Logic, IT consultancy company, and he's also the author of Hacking for Dummies, which is just out in its third edition. Kevin, congratulations on the new revision of the book.
Thank you very much, Jeff.
So let's look, before we jump into the biggest security holes, which is gonna, I think, gonna be a great chat. Let's talk about the book. It just came out. It's from John Wiley and Sons. This is its third edition, as I mentioned, and according to the publisher, they, because of the number of editions and all the time on the market, they're saying it's the top-selling book on computer security. For folks who don't know, what's the book about?
It's basically about using a malicious mindset to test your systems and your IT operations for security weaknesses so you can plug the holes before the bad guys exploit them. It's really that simple.
Okay, so it's not about how to become a hacker.
It's about how to use a hacker mindset and how to use hacking tools to exploit the holes that the bad guys do. You know, the bad guys are always one or two steps ahead of us, and we need to be able to step into their mindset, step into their shoes, and look at our own systems from that perspective. But yeah, no, it's not about how to become a malicious hacker and a criminal hacker and whatnot. In fact, I have a disclaimer against that in the book, where you know if you want to do this stuff for malicious purposes, you're on your own. So it's all about above board business level issues, so you can enhance your information security.
Gotcha. And so this book is targeted for the dummies in business.
Well, it's really targeted for anyone responsible for information security and privacy in their business or for their customers. You know, whether you're an IT director or a system admin or maybe a compliance officer or even a consultant or an auditor, the book has a lot of non-technical content combined with the technical details that the IT and security specialists need to know. You know, so there's really something in it for everyone.
Okay. What year did you first publish this book?
This book first came out in 2003.
A lot has changed.
Been around for a while, yeah.
7 years, huh?
Absolutely.
What's new?
Well, I would say with the third edition of Hacking for Dummies, I feel like I finally got it right. You know, really all technical books are works in progress. There have been so many changes in the world of information security and IT since I first wrote it back in 2003, and, you know, new tools, new hacks, and even some new testing methodologies, and I myself, I've grown and I've learned a lot over the years as well, so it's really enabled me to fine-tune the content of the book and to turn it into something valuable.
And I guess, I mean, in 2003, today we hear about things like cross-site scripting. I mean, was that really going on back then, or is that
developed? It was, but it just wasn't as big of a problem, or people just didn't know about it, but now it's, yeah, very prevalent, and it's a real big issue.
Well, that kind of leads us into some of the biggest security holes that are out there, which you're the expert on. Let's talk about those. You've kind of got a list here of some of the biggest security holes, and some of the ones we're going to get to are social engineering, physical security, network security holes, operating systems, web apps, databases, and storage systems. So let's kick it off. Social engineering you and I have talked about that before on this podcast series, but just how it can become some big security holes. What's the biggest security hole that you've seen in social engineering?
This is nothing new, but it's something I see everywhere. It's overly trusting users. It's overly trusting human beings, buying into every email that they get, buying into a phone call, buying into a person in the hallway trying to get through the front door. And just assuming that everything is well and that the person is credible and is supposed to be there.
Would phishing fall into that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So phishing is sort of the electronic version of social engineering. And, you know, you mentioned cross-site scripting. Cross-site scripting sort of, it can be, you know, used in conjunction with, or, you know, it's part of and it's related to phishing. And it can very well lure users in, make them believe that they're going to a legitimate site and making a legitimate transaction, and it can end up in a negative way. They can have a virus or some sort of malware downloaded to the computer. They can be redirected and enter in sensitive information that the bad guys ultimately get a hold of. It can lead to a lot of situations. So social engineering is not just a physical, you know, one-on-one, person-to-person type thing anymore.
Yeah. Phishing has obviously grown a lot. I mean, we see it all the time. And of course, certain banks are being hit by it worse than others. You've got physical security on the list of biggest security holes. And you know, when we look at, like, the movies, the biggest security hole on it, physical security, it's the whole laser beam intrusion detectors and people just crawl under them. Well, what's the reality there, Kevin?
Oh, wow. If only every business had the lasers, intrusion detection system, and all that high-tech stuff. To me, the physical security vulnerabilities that most organizations have are so much more basic and so much more simple to fix if you choose to fix them. It's the lack of someone in the reception area. It's people propping doors open. It's all the typical stuff and the really simple and downright stupid stuff that we see all the time. And one of the things that really comes to mind when people ask me about physical security, you know, what's the biggest deal with it? I would say it's the lack of communication between IT and the physical security folks. We're into this whole convergence thing, and all these physical access control systems and monitoring systems are on the network now, and nobody's talking to each other, and there are ways for malicious employees or malicious outsiders to abuse that disconnect, which can lead to some pretty big issues.
Yeah, and there is a disconnect. The company will go unnamed, but I was talking with a big corporate security department a few months ago, mm-hmm. and their IT department wouldn't even support their physical security systems. So these were PC-based, you know, DVRs and video management systems. So it's a scary kind of world. Of course, that was all in their networks, which, yeah.
Well, interestingly, yeah, you see that all the time. You see that the IT folks, they throw their hands up. They're like, I'm not responsible. I'm not accountable. And then the physical folks are saying, well, it's on the IT side of the world. It's on the network. We have IP addresses. It's going across their wires. So somebody needs to be responsible, but there's no real accountability.
Yeah. Yeah. And they don't always want to support it, especially if they weren't involved in the selection process.
Absolutely.
Criteria.
It's an ego thing.
Yep. And it's on their networks, which brings us to let's talk about network security holes. What's the biggest security hole you can find on a network?
Probably the biggest thing, and this is sort of a more of a misconception as it is a vulnerability, but it's the fact that, well, we're sending information over our internal network, therefore it's secure. And even going beyond that, people say, well, we use Ethernet switches. We use this network technology that only allows a user to see what's being transmitted between his computer and another computer, be it a server or another workstation or whatever, and that person can't see anything else on the network. Well, yeah, that's how switches are designed, and that's how, you know, these virtual LANs or VLANs have come about. But there are free tools out there that allow you to basically disable that switching functionality in an Ethernet switch and get out there and see everything that's going across the wire, be it passwords, documents, web browsing, as well as voice over IP sessions. And there are some free tools that you can download. I cover this in the book, where you basically tell it to listen to voice over IP, and it will capture every single voice over IP session. You right-click on whichever session you want and click play, and you can listen. It's amazing stuff. A lot of people don't know about that.
So if someone wanted to listen into your management conference calls, That could be potentially damaging information. You know, business strategy discussions.
It could get ugly.
It's corporate espionage, basically. So.
Absolutely.
Okay. Good old operating systems. We've got Windows 7 is out now after what was a big flop of Windows Vista, and a lot of us are still running XP because it was so good.
Well, right.
Sort of good. what's happening with security wholesale operating system?
Yes, good is a relative term, right? Operating
system. Enough patches, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, there are two things with operating systems. The first thing that I see all the time, I still see it. It's like we're beating a dead horse here, but it's weak passwords. You wouldn't believe the weak passwords that I come across on workstation servers, just general, you know, password policies where they may require six characters, but, you know, the users, they're going to take the path of least resistance. So what are they going to type in? They're going to type in, you know, some basic word. They're going to type in 123456 or all ones or all zeros or whatever. And that's by far the biggest issue I see with operating systems. Probably a close second is patch management or lack of patch management and keeping the software up to date. And interestingly, I'm seeing two sides to this. I see on the workstation side, most workstations are actually up to date. They're patched. They're not that easily exploitable. But interestingly, it's the servers that tend to be unpatched. They have the exploitable vulnerabilities where people can gain, you know, full remote access without ever having to log in and do whatever they want on the servers and whatnot. And it all goes back to the fact that system administrators, they don't want to patch their servers all the time. They want to turn on automatic updates and have their servers patched because they're afraid it's going to take the system down. And I think that's a viable logic and approach, but man, you got to be careful with that. It's a big deal.
Sure, you don't want that patch to crash your database that, you know, everyone's supporting, right? Everyone's using.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, I see this a lot with databases. You know, we can't apply the database patches because our vendor's not going to support that. Well, that's fine and good, but let me show you how a malicious internal user can use free tools to gain access to your database and do whatever he or she wants to do with it, including downloading all the data off of it, selling it, doing whatever they want.
Is there a sense that maybe some of the IT security departments and even physical security departments need to put some pressure on the vendors to tell them, look, you've got to be able to, apply patches without breaking your software or your, you know, whatever is running on our system that you've installed and that you're paid for?
Yeah, I think, a lot of end users, a lot of businesses don't have the clout or the pull with these vendors to go and say, hey, you guys need to fix this or you need to stop, you know, breaking stuff or you need to support us and our own patch management. We need to be able to do what we need to do to keep our systems secure, and you guys need to be able to support that. Yeah, I think it makes sense, but it's probably only going to work if you're a big company, because if you're a small fish in the sea and you're not paying that much money, they're really not going to listen to you. It's kind of like, you know, lobbying with politicians. It's whoever has the money, that's who they're going to listen to.
Yeah, it's an unfortunate situation there, politics.
Right.
All right, let's talk about web apps. Obviously, so much of today is done over web applications, and I think this touches on the whole, you know, cloud computing concept, but what are we looking at there for security risks and vulnerabilities?
Well, this is something that's I'm really passionate about. It's near and dear to my heart because it's one of my areas of focus, and it's where I do a good portion of my security assessment work is in web applications. And I would say, generally speaking, the biggest problem I see with web application security is the lack of testing. You know, we're going to write this application, or it's going to be some commercial off-the-shelf system that may be customized a little bit, and we're going to put it out there under the assumption that our developers wrote secure code and that our QA guys or our testers actually checked for all the possible bugs within the system. And that's just simply not happening. I know that there are good developers that are trying to write secure code. I know there are a lot of good QA professionals out there trying to, you know, find the flaws and make the system as highest quality and most secure as possible. But man, I'm still seeing a lot of stuff out there related to cross-site scripting, related to weak passwords, and specifically related to like login mechanisms. You know, a lot of people assume that, well, you go to a website or web application, you type in a username and password, and that's secure. Everything behind that is secure, but it's so easy to manipulate these login mechanisms. Once you get in and start looking behind the scenes at how these developers have created these login mechanisms, almost anybody can trick the application into believing that that person is actually logged in when indeed they haven't. And this goes for all this fancy multi-factor authentication stuff that a lot of the banking and credit union type businesses have put in place over the past few years. It's simply a misnomer, and it's a big weakness. And I would say, finally, regarding web applications, business logic flaws. Being able to go in and as a regular user and do things that I shouldn't be able to do because I'm just poking around and tricking the application into doing other things. There's a lot going on with web applications. It's a very complex area of security, and it's something that you can't ignore.
You know, and what you said about there being companies that are out there to test this for the vendors is absolutely right. In fact, I was on the phone yesterday with a company that's come out with a new sort of converged physical IT security product related to access management. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about their development process, and they, you know, sent their system off, which runs a lot of web apps, and they sent it off and had it brutalized by a company up on the East Coast for quite some time to make sure that it didn't have those holes or that they knew what the holes were so they could fix them.
Absolutely. I actually do a fair amount of that work myself. You know, people hire me. They're saying, Kevin, we need an independent look at our application because we have clients that are asking for that. We have business partners that are asking for that, or we have these regulatory requirements. So we need an independent assessment of this application so we can include that into the sales process, into the marketing process, and ultimately the audit and compliance and governance process.
All right, number six on our list, databases. We live off of databases these days. What are some of the security holes we're looking at there?
The biggest one is the fact that most database systems are out of sight and therefore out of mind. You wouldn't believe the systems that I see. I'll go in and perform an internal assessment, and I'll sit down with the IT or network managers, security folks, and ask them where their databases are. Okay, where are your SQL Server systems? Where's Oracle, DB2, all that stuff? And they give me a relatively small set of systems to check, and I'll go in and I'll poke around, and that's fine and dandy. But then during the other phases of my testing, I come across sometimes dozens more database systems that are out there that they have forgotten about. Like, oh yeah, we forgot about that system, or oh yeah, that's a test system, it's no big deal. But the thing is, these databases, whether they're in test, whether they're in production, or they're assumed to be unimportant or whatever, there's almost always something juicy in these databases that are not protected, they're not locked down, they're not being monitored or audited in any way. And there's just a lot of bad things that can happen.
Yeah. I mean, and that's such a common thing. I mean, in our combing of the news all the time for securityinfowatch.com, you know, we constantly see where, you know, these, you know, random databases have been accessed by malicious hackers. And then all
right.
of a sudden you've got the company or the school or whoever was hacked having to send out 300,000 letters, pay
yep.
for credit checks for 100,000 people, and really just take some pie on their face, which, you know, they don't want it the least. So,
right? Yeah, it's one of those things. You've got to know what you've got and make sure you test it all, because it could end up being an expensive security breach down the road. And even if your systems are not externally accessible, you need to look at all of your internal systems as well, because there will undoubtedly be somebody somewhere, a malicious user, somebody that's having financial trouble at home or whatever, that's out there poking around on the network looking for information that they can use to their advantage.
Mm-hmm. And that brings us to point number 7, storage systems, where all the data is kept. What's the biggest security hole related to storage?
I think it's the fact that we have so much stuff stored out on the network, be it on in a SAN environment or a NAS, or be it on removable media or laptops and other mobile devices. There's so much stuff, and we really don't know where everything's at, much less understand how it's classified and needs to be protected. So, you know, the data is literally scattered everywhere across the network with no real controls. And once that stuff gets out and spread around to mobile devices, you know, these USB thumb drives, laptops, smartphones, and even on these higher-end storage systems that are deep inside the network, the stuff can undoubtedly spread around, and it's most likely in an unprotected fashion, and it's just a matter of time before somebody stumbles across it and gains access to it.
Okay. So there you have it, the 7 biggest security holes that businesses are facing today. We sound a little bit negative here, so let's maybe turn to a more positive thing. Let's talk about solutions. If businesses could do something to help improve their IT security, for, you know, one thing more than anything else, what would you pick? What would you tell them to do?
Get management on board. We have to make management responsible for security, and we have to hold them accountable. You know, business owners and executives have to realize that information security is ultimately their problem, and it's not IT's per se, which is the common perception. Well, that's an IT issue. That's a technical issue. That's something that all these admins that we pay this good money to are handling. So I'm going to be hands off. I'm not going to have any oversight, any responsibility, and I'm not going to lead by example. And you know, this head in the sand excuse is only going to go so far. And the thing that I've seen, I think we're starting to turn a corner here with this, with getting management buy-in. The reality is, once the right people are on board with this stuff, it's amazing how things magically fall into place. You know, you go from no buy-in whatsoever to all of a sudden maybe the CFO understands security, or maybe the CIO is able to pull some strings and get the president on board, or the board, certain board members in line with security, and all of a sudden there's budget for security, for all the technical controls that are needed. There's budgeting for security assessments, budgeting for training, which is often overlooked. So buy-in is by far the biggest issue and the simplest solution to all this stuff, in my opinion.
Okay. Well, it's the beginning of the year, and one thing that media loves to do, and since I'm part of the media, I guess I'd love to do it too, is make predictions for the year. Kind of to segue from, you know, that talk about the buy-in of the management, 2009 was a pretty tough year for security budgets, definitely on the physical security side, and I don't think IT, you know, departments were hit as hard, but they definitely weren't in the expansion modes that maybe they had been for, you know, in previous years.
Right.
What are budgets looking like for 2010? Are things looking up? Are companies ready to address these new security flaws and prepare themselves?
I think the businesses that are on board with security and where they have the management buy-in, they have that leadership, I think absolutely the budgets are there. And based on the studies that I've seen late last year, and I just saw one earlier this week, talked about that IT and information security budgets are going to be on the rise, on the upswing this year, which is a good indicator that, again, that we are maybe turning that corner and getting management on board. And if anything, it's all coming about in the name of compliance, which I don't agree with, but it's at least something is happening with security. So, yeah, absolutely. I think you've got to maintain that momentum. You can't let up. Just like with physical security, you've got to not only have the right controls in place, but this is an ongoing process, not a one-time deal, and you've got to be able to fund that and support that consistently.
Well, there you have it. IT budget's looking up. Businesses need to get management on board, and Kevin's new book is out. Again, it's Hacking for Dummies from John Wiley & Sons. It's available on Amazon.com. In fact, I understand that it's also available for the Kindle. So for those of you
Correct.
Who are tech heads and have the Amazon e-book reader, the Kindle, you can jump on it that way. And Kevin, thanks again for coming on for another podcast.
Hey, Jeff. Thanks for having me on again today.
Great. This concludes episode 47 of SecurityInfoWatch.com's SIW Radio podcast series.